The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now imagine you could hold a baby hare and bottle feed it. And then imagine that 2 years later, it's still running from the fields when you called it and snoozed in your house for hours. Well, this is what happened to our first guest today to tell us about her book called Raising Hare. Welcome to the show, Chloe Dalton.
Hi, Selena. Thank you for having me on.
I wish this had happened to me. It sounds gorgeous.
Well, this is the thing, is it could have happened to you. You know, I'm a sort of city woman. I spent my whole life and career in London. I don't have pets in my life because my job involves traveling. I'm not a scientist or a vet. I'm just an every woman. And I had this extraordinary experience of raising and living alongside a hare. And I wrote the book about it just because it was an improbable thing to happen to me. And I wanted to share it with other people.
Yeah, it's a lovely story. Am I right? A baby hare is a leveret?
It is indeed, and it's an unusual word because they're unusual animals. I mean, in parts of Britain, parts of Europe, they're plentiful, but actually in lots of areas they've been, you know, driven out or killed. So not many people get to see a leveret, and before I saw this one, I'd never seen a living hare in my life.
Wow. So you're a city girl, as you said, so presumably you went to the countryside, you didn't see a hare in the city.
Yes. Well, what happened is in the early stages of the pandemic, and I know it now sounds like we're talking about something that happened a long time ago, but it's not that long time ago, but I moved from London to the north of England to be near my parents, like lots of people. I had family members I was worried about, and I ended up living in a tiny barn in the middle of nowhere in this isolated area surrounded by fields and woods. So, you know, a very lucky experience in many respects. But when I was there, all I could think about was what I was missing out on and wanting life to go back to normal and to go back to London, like everybody else who was affected in different ways by the pandemic. And it was just literally one day when I was out for a short walk, and I describe in my book the circumstances that led to me being out there, that I came across this tiny animal that had been separated from its mother, had been chased by a dog, and that's what precipitated me into this whole experience. I thought it was going to last just for a matter of hours because I was going to bring this little animal in and then return it to the field under the cover of darkness so it could be reunited with its mother, and it's ended up lasting 4 years so far and counting.
Oh, that's lovely. Are you still living in the country then now?
Well, I've just, so in the book, I describe what happened to me, you know, working out how to look after this creature when for various reasons it turned out that I had to try to keep it alive and try to work out, you know, what a hare needed when I was somebody, as I say, who just wasn't really very equipped for this. And then the experience just kept on developing in ways I could never have imagined. These magical things happen as a result of the fact that I made one instinctive decision, which is that I wasn't going to imprison, cage this animal, and I wasn't going to treat it as a pet. I never gave her a name. And somehow there's this magical moment in the story where she leaves, and I think she's gone forever. She leaps the wall to the garden, but instead she chooses to return. And this is the sort of unique pivot in the story. I know lots of people have rescued animals before, but it's just the idea of a relationship with a wild animal that comes and goes, that explores the fields at night and rests in my house during the daytime. And because it's been such a magical experience, to answer your question, and so joyful, I find it very, very hard to tear myself away. And my life has undergone some really profound transformations, including spending a lot more time in the countryside watching the hares.
Oh, it sounds like it was meant to be. It's fate.
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, I didn't do anything to deserve it. Oh. So I've been gifted this joyful experience that's reconnected me to nature, opened my eyes to nature and to how special, unique and extraordinary hares are. You know, we tend to overlook them and just treat them as sort of large rabbits, but they're something so much more than that. And that's what I delve into in the book.
So how did you find out what to do? I mean, even as an animal lover myself, I wouldn't know what to bottle feed a hare on. Did you go on the internet to find out what to do?
Well, yes, exactly. I started out on the internet I got some advice from family members. My sister has a small farm, so she regularly bottle feeds lambs. And we had a conversation about what might be the best kind of powdered milk to give to a baby hare. There was an early stage when this little animal was so small that it was sort of tottering around the house and kept falling over. And I found myself Googling, you know, trying to work out what this was. Of course, I realized with hindsight that it was just because it was so young. Yeah. It was literally, it weighed less than 100 grams. It was like, it could fit in the palm of my hand. It was absolutely tiny. But because hares, unlike rabbits, they live above ground, they're born with their eyes open, they're a full coat of fur ready to go, they're little miniatures of an adult hare. So it could move around. You know, rabbits live underground for the first 4 weeks of their life and they're kind of born with their blind with no fur. But this from its earliest days, this little animal would explore the house around me and sort of sleep under my bed and go out into the garden and do all sorts of adorable things. And I was meanwhile ordering up every book I could find, you know, from public libraries, since we were all in lockdown, so I couldn't go out and get any books, to try to find out from any source I could. And I found some really strange ones, like 18th century poetry from people who'd kept hares hundreds of years ago, you know, to try to work out what a growing hare would need.
Wow. And were you surprised then? I suspect, like you said, you thought it'd probably only last a couple of hours. So did you think you were going to wake up the next day and sadly find that he'd passed away or she'd passed away?
Well, I did have that fear. So what happened is that I knew that you weren't supposed to interfere, you're not supposed to interfere with animals in the wild. And so I left this little leveret where I'd found it for a long period of time. But when I came back 4 hours later, it was still there. There were lots of predators, you know, buzzards in the air and foxes and things. And I was worried that it might be hit by a car. So I thought I would take it in temporarily. And I went to great lengths not to touch it directly. I wrapped it in dried grass from the field edge so I wouldn't sort of transfer my scent onto it. But I rang someone I know who used to be a gamekeeper, and he said to me, "I'm very sorry to tell you, that's never going to work. You know, first, its mother will reject it if she's still alive. Mm-hmm. And secondly, hares don't do well in human hands. I'm afraid you're going to have to accept that it's going to die." And I was just mortified at that point. I thought I'd done something really rash, that maybe I've endangered this creature. And then I surprised myself from finding this kind of resolve that whatever it took, I was going to nurture this little animal and I was going to enable it to return to the wild, that it didn't belong to me, and that my job was somehow just to bridge those first few weeks of its life so that it could one day return and be fully free, which is what it did. It's just that it surprised me, or she surprised me, as I describe in the book the way that I worked out that she was a she. You might be able to guess if you're listening, but it was a wonderful surprise. And there's an amazing moment in the book where this hare does the most extraordinary thing that makes me realize that she's female. But when she, you know, had the full wild at her disposal and could run as far and fast as she wanted to, she did that. But then she still felt attached to the house and would come back. And I wrote the book, you know, with this beautiful animal stretched out on its side, asleep in my office, which is something that you'd never expect with a wild animal. And it gave me this hope that maybe all's not lost. You know, we're all surrounded by such terrible news about the environment and climate. And I know this is just one tiny little story, but it is a sort of hint at the possibility that we could find a better balance and that coexistence is possible.
Yeah, it is a wonderful story. And you just wouldn't expect it with a hare. For some reason, you sort of wouldn't be so surprised with a rabbit, which, as you say, are very different creatures. But they have become domesticated pets in some situations. But a hare, I would have thought, was very individual, very, very not selfish. What's the words I'm looking for? Where people describe cats. Independent. Yes.
That's really perceptive of you, because that's exactly what they're like. And they don't look like rabbits when they've got much longer legs and ears. They're a completely different colour if you see them side by side. And I've got some photographs of my Instagram account that shows that. They're more like, when you look at them up close, they're more like sort of small dogs or large deer. They're very elegant and mysterious, but then they're not like either of those two things. You know, they don't behave like a dog. She doesn't paw my leg or ask for food. And she's actually, in many respects, more independent than a cat, if you can imagine that. You know, the kind of wonderful thing about the relationship with this wild animal has been that knowing that on some level she doesn't actually need me. You know, she gets the food that she needs from the environment. She knows everything she needs to know for her own survival out of sheer instinct. linked, but she chooses to trust a human and she chooses to rest in my house. And that somehow means more to me, you know, it's somehow more of a compliment. She almost sort of discounts me that I'm just another animal in the landscape rather than there being this kind of bond that there would be with a cat that would look to you for food, yeah. Even though they're still capable of hunting.
Yeah, she wants you as opposed to needs you.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, I'd love to think, of course, you know, it's wonderful to have these bonds with animals and you sort of, they're sort of things we dream of in childhood. But I suppose I'm trying to say that I feel like, hand on heart, she doesn't need me. It's just that she sort of coexists. And in the book, I describe the things that happen that mean that I end up living surrounded by a sort of hare family and, you know, both in the house and in the garden, and seeing these very, very wild, secretive animals that, as you say, have never been domesticated, having a chance to see how they behave when they're totally relaxed, you know, yawning and sunbathing. They're so sort of endearing and they have this amazing curiosity, like other young animals, but it's very nice to sort of see it in a creature that is often described really unfairly as sort of cowardly and timid or crazy. You know, harebrained is an insult.
Yes,
it's slightly old fashioned. We don't go around saying it much in our day-to-day life, but we know the expression when you hear it. And I've actually come to think it's the opposite. You know, hares are amazing survivors. They're this sort of emblem of resilience and resistance and survival despite everything that makes their life hard in the modern world, including climate change as well as farming. So I'm full of admiration for them. I think we should be changing the language and starting to make it more of a compliment to be like a hare.
Indeed. So does she just come and go as she pleases?
Yes, well, I describe in the book sort of laughing at myself, the lengths that I've gone to accommodate the hare, because it was really important to me that she's never felt trapped. So I began, you know, because we were all working from home, it was easy to do this, but I began by always just keeping doors open. You can imagine my heating bill was a bit of a nightmare, but you know, and if I found the hare standing in front of a door, I would just open it so that she was free at all times and never felt sort of trapped. And then over time, I persuaded a carpenter. It took a little bit of persuading because he didn't think it was a very good idea, but I persuaded him to create what I like to think of as the world's first hare's door. And there's this little door that's set into a glass door in the house. And then I find this company in America that produces this sort of device that opens the door to chicken coops. And I get that installed. So it makes it possible, even when I have to come to London for work or travel, it makes it possible to open the door to the hare.
Oh, and you've not been tempted to give her a name?
Well, I haven't, but you know how you discover things about yourself in ways you don't expect? And I just found I was just a bit stubborn about this idea of naming her, that it didn't feel right, you know, to put a sort of human name on her. It's totally normal with pets, but somehow she's not a pet. And, you know, if I knew what hare language was, then that would be totally different. But sort of there were some funny moments, like my friends and family all kind of competed to sort of suggest names, you know, like Everett the Leveret, things like that. But I wasn't tempted, and I was a bit, I don't know, maybe a bit eccentric in that way, but it just didn't feel right and it didn't really feel necessary. And I'm glad I didn't, because she's who she is. And also because there is some kind of mystery to animals in the wild. At the end of the day, we don't know what they think and feel. We can imagine, we can hope to understand, we can try to empathize, but they are different to us. And they deserve that space and they deserve that freedom.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I'm looking at your website and there are some gorgeous photos. Absolutely gorgeous. She really is. And I assume there's some photographs in the book as well.
Well, there are illustrations that are all based on actual photographs of the hare. They're done by this amazing Irish artist called Denise Nestor. So they're actually done as sort of line drawings, but they're all true to life and they all capture the sort of spirit of the hare. And then I put photographs on my Instagram account, my website, so people who want to can see what she looks like in all her glory.
Oh, she's beautiful. Well, people can find out more from the book, which is called Raising Hare. It's a BBC Radio 4 Book of the Week. It's also a Waterstones Book of the Year. And even Angelina Jolie likes it. Great news, great news. And the book is by Chloe Dalton, who we're speaking to now. So for Instagram, Chloe, do we just put your name in?
Yes.
And the website is chloedalton.uk. Thank you for joining us. Do give the hair next time you see her, my love.
I certainly will. Thank you, Selina. Take care.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.